I've just accosted people in the corridor because I couldn't help but get drawn into the conversation in amongst the screaming kids. It was fascinating. Who am I standing with?
My name's Gaynor O'Flynn. I'm a multimedia artist.
Kevin Anderson from the Tyndall Centre in the University of Manchester.
And Chris Gillsby from Newcastle University.
What did I interrupt?
We were just talking about the most effective way to get a change in behaviour. And one idea was to change hearts and minds in a bottom-up procedure. I just put the idea that the quickest, surest way of achieving something rapidly was to have a top-down change in regulation. So we would need to get to the hearts and minds of those in government rather than the hearts and minds of the whole population.
Kevin.
I'm not arguing with him now, because that's what I was saying. Politicians have got hearts and minds too.
But they don't seem to have the forward thinking. They don't seem to be able to think further than 4 years ahead. So do you think, I mean, we need long-term policy, surely, not short-term, this is going to be popular, please vote for us, we promise to do this.
Well, we certainly need long-term policy, but we shouldn't be too cynical of politicians. They do come up with some very long-term policies. The concept of devolution is a long-term policy. So they do that. In some of these other areas, they're reluctant to do that because there isn't an impression that by putting these policies in place that they will lose their electoral legitimacy. So the argument that I would put forward is that what we require are some of us as individuals, particularly those of us who are influential, are prepared to stand up and make the point, make some adjustments to what we're doing. And in doing that, we're not actually changing everyone's hearts and minds, but we are starting an agenda which may then end up changing the policy. So the bottom up for a few people starts to drive the policy process, then that top down process affects everyone. And it's that bringing together of the bottom up and the top down. And we don't know quite what's the best way of doing that, but it has to be both those. One or the other will not work. It's going to be some combination of the two.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. But what I think we were talking about before as well is the old-fashioned campaigning, you know, when I was younger. I would be very much involved in the them and us attitude to campaigning, and I consistently saw that that didn't work. When we look at quantum, we are interconnected, and we see that mirrored in modern technology in a way that, you know, we can see that in nature, we can see that in multimedia, we can see that in everything. So for me, there are different roles for the group, but fundamentally, if we carry on polarising and campaigning against, we don't leave that, you know, fifth element, that opportunity for space in order to allow people to change. And for me, you know, call it hippie, I don't really care. What I see is fear. I see fear in governments, I see fear in business, I see people fear in human beings that feel that they need to survive by surrounding themselves with more and more stuff. And until we start to feel less fearful collectively as a society in the first world, and we start to feel that we need to consume less, that, and we change intrinsically our own heart and mind, and we can begin to relax and really see collective change on a grand scale.
So we may be surrounded by future decision makers. Where are the decision makers here today?
Well, I think we're all part of the decision-making process. I don't like the idea that decision-makers are these other people away.
Sure.
That those of us that are fortunate enough to have the appropriate education, the wherewithal and the time to engage this process, we are part of that policy-making process. If we lobby our MPs, you know, they get a letter from 30 people, they know that 300 people will vote differently on that issue, even if they're not otherwise writing to them. So we are part of that process, and we have to recognise that in democracy we have some responsibility to engage. So I think all the people here, I'm sure if they got engaged in some way, they can put some pressure on the policy process along with other people doing similar things elsewhere in the country, and then we can bring about a change. But the problem for climate change, unlike some of the other sustainability issues, is we need to do it at a credibly rapid and fast rate. We don't have historical analogues for where we are now with environmental problems. Probably only times of war.
We really need to harness the opinions here right now.
It's not just about politicians. It's about us all making changes in the way we live and the economics choices we make and the way that we exist really as human beings. You know, economic change, we all know the effect that not buying goods had on the apartheid regime. We know that we can do this collectively through the decisions we make in our ordinary day-to-day life and those choices that we make. So politicians are important, everybody's important, but, you know, not everyone can be everywhere.
No, and I like the way you say everybody's important. I'd hate to think that there will be no change without laws. Surely mindsets can be changed through being humiliated into driving a smaller car or whatever is required.
I think that's...
Well, when I say humiliated, I'm using the term because we were talking earlier on about smoking not being acceptable anymore. We need to make this not acceptable as much as place more laws and policy?
Well, it's not acceptable to be a drunk driver nowadays. It's not acceptable to smoke indoors or in public. But sadly, it still is acceptable to most people to drive a large gas-guzzling four-wheel drive car around. So I think we've got a long way to go with that.
And that won't change without new laws. Is that what we're saying?
Well, it's just to look at the two examples we looked at there: smoking and drunk driving. Drunk driving. Both of those have been behavioural shifts, but they're behavioural shifts that have gone along with laws. There are laws against both of those,
yep.
So it's not as if it's necessarily again just one or the other. Laws exist and are only really function when there is a social contract where most people actually agree with the broad premise of those laws. So they go hand in hand, and I don't think we should polarise this as it's individual behaviour only or laws only. They have to come together in some way, and whether it's the chicken and egg issue is a difficult one there, is whether the behaviour drives the policy or the policy drives the behaviour.
And the humiliation and shame aspect, I really think we should need to move forward from that. I really do think we need a more compassionate way of looking at ourselves and others and the planet, and really if we want to facilitate change, we know that we want someone to understand our point of view. We need to hold some sort of sense of our own humanity and our own shared experience really to facilitate change.
This came out in conversation about focusing on the positive rather than the negative.
Well, yeah, we see media, don't we, constantly trying to shame and blame. I mean, I just don't see that in the modern age of campaigning and communicating and wanting differences that shaming and blaming works.
I think there's a useful analogy with the drink driving and smoking, that after both of those laws came in, I was surprised how widespread the acceptance was and so many people saying this is a great idea. And I think there is actually a positive attitude with the public in this country, at least, that if we had sensible legislation which made it easy for us to make the right choices, then there'd be widespread acceptance. And I think we're actually missing a trick that politicians don't realise there's an open door to push at to a large extent. And they're not bringing these laws in because of powerful lobbying from quite small numbers of people in powerful positions.
So it's a position of fear again. Unless they overcome that fear and they're prepared. Everybody knows what's right with this, in my belief. We have an intuitive knowing about what's right for our race and what's right for the planet. We just know. No disrespect to you guys and your graphs and everything, but we have a common knowledge. I loved your graphs.
Some of those
graphs
are pretty pretty now. They're looking nicer and nicer.
They were brilliant graphs.
I think our politicians need to grasp the nettle of leadership, and they do this in some areas already, that often the public and it's certainly indeed the private sector are not necessarily in favour of some of the policies that are put in place. But often when policies are actually put in place, the opposition tends to go away, and that's why you need courageous leadership to some extent. But it also has to be quite thoughtful, that leadership. If we think of the congestion charge, I mean, by and large, there was a very large populace against that, both individuals and organisations. Once it's in place, people are much more in favour of it. It's the same with the smoking to some extent and some of the other legislation that's put forward. So you need leadership, but that leadership has to actually have some basis in the electorate as well. But it doesn't necessarily, you don't have to bring everyone with you right at the beginning. People will then think, actually, that's good. That's an idea that I really like now. I didn't like it before. It seems to me to be working quite well. You see this often with things like wind turbines, for instance. There's a lot of opposition to them going up. And once they're actually up and running, when you go back and look at that, this is not always the case, but by and large, you'll see that the level of opposition has actually gone down significantly once the wind turbines are actually up and in place. And this is the case with a lot of policies as well. So I think this requires some courageous leadership to step ahead of the electorate and to show leadership. This is, of course, why we employ them. We don't employ them to be managers, to run focus groups. We employ them to show leadership on complex system-level issues, and that's what I expect them to do.
Thank you very much indeed. I'm so glad I butted in.
Okay. Yeah.